Welcome to Book Talk for Book Talk, a literary podcast where we have been deep diving into your favorite novels.
This is Jack.
And I'm Amy.
And our listeners love to share their thoughts and theories via email and voicemail, so we're sharing some of them via our weekly mini episodes.
The views expressed by the hosts and listeners are entirely their own and in no way represent the thoughts or intentions of the original author. This podcast is a discussion, shared to spark thought and conversation on the characters and themes of this novel.
Spoilers may be discussed with or without warning. Explicit language, as well as themes of sex, violence, abuse, death, and depression, will recur throughout this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. Jack here. I just want to apologize because I did not plug in my microphone correctly for this episode, so I sound a little bit off. That was a rookie mistake. I am sorry.
Welcome to the very first episode of the new year.
Oh, God. I was going to respond and then I was like, wait, no, I'm not ready for 2024.
We're recording this on the 31st, so you better be ready for 2024.
In my head, it is still the 30th.
Which is fair.
I have one more day.
We're recording this in the past. I mean, obviously, it's always in the past. But like in the past, last year in 2023. But to get us ready, you know, that like, you know what January 2024 means?
Crescent City.
Yeah, it does. So not just the third book, but some might say even more highly anticipated, our fifth season.
Wow. Some being not even our mothers.
Starting off the new year with a new year kick to the gut.
That's right.
So we're doing a listener email today, and mm-hmm. I tried to find some of these Crescent City related listener emails, and Amy doesn't know what I'm reading, and I haven't read things out loud with my mouth.
And this is all in anticipation of season 5, which starts Tuesday, January 16th. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And no one knows the style that we're doing it in. We haven't announced that yet. So like,
I don't know that they'll be able to tell a difference.
The fact that I'm going to cut this out, but Patreon can hear it.
Oh, I was thinking about our other process.
Notes. Yeah, this season it's like our note style is a little bit different, but our publishing style is going to be a little bit different.
Yeah.
I don't know when we're going to announce that, but you know.
Yeah. 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 Yep. 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 Before we dive in, folks, we have a spoiler warning, not only for Crescent City, but for all of SJM Universe. This is going to be true for all of season 5, but especially this episode.
Well, season 5, we try to separate it.
We try to separate it. We try to separate it. This episode, we're not separating.
We're not trying.
I'm trying to be vague in my descriptions enough that people who know, and people who don't, don't. But, you know.
If you know, you know.
If you know, you know.
Let's get into the emails. The first one comes up from Jeannie.
All right.
Thanks so much for your podcast. It's really helped me get back into critical thinking during my reading slump. As y'all start analyzing Crescent City, I've been thinking about how much SJM reuses similar character types in her series, but through different lenses. For example, I think the Autumn King's personality is very similar to Rhys's character before he mates with Feyre. The main difference is we only view the Autumn King from antagonistic relationships. My theory is that his relationship with Ember is a parallel to Rhys's relationship with Feyre, but Ember remained human and was never able to fully embrace the mating bond, so the Autumn King never evolved like Rhys did. I also believe that the Autumn King is protecting something big, like Rhys was with Velaris. Anyway, those are my thoughts. I look forward to listening along as you dive into Crescent City.
I love this. I think the Rhys comparison is really poignant to me, especially when we look at things like there are objects in their offices that are mm-hmm. identical, mm-hmm. Which I think we talk about in our multiverse breadcrumbs for the season. So I love this idea. I also think just by calling him the Autumn King, for those of us who've read ACOTAR before Crescent City, we're going to automatically make comparisons to Baron and all of the Autumn Court sons. Mm-hmm. And Autumn for us is automatically villainous now.
Yeah.
And I think SJM does it on purpose. So I agree.
And it's almost like a red herring of villainous,
right? It is. Mm-hmm. He's constantly conducting experiments, looking mm-hmm. into things that we don't understand. And I think it's going to come up in Crescent City 3. And yeah. So I agree that he's probably hiding something big.
Yeah, I think when we were taking our notes, I don't know if I said this out loud or kept it to myself, because I was like, you know what, Jack, maybe you shouldn't come off so thirsty, but I'm going to do this now. Where it was like, all right, Autumn Daddy doesn't seem too bad. Like, okay, it's not great that he wanted to kidnap Ember. However,
or that he burned his son's arms.
I forgot about that part.
He was okay. Physically abusive to Rune.
Okay, there's that. So Autumn Daddy isn't the best.
He's not perfect.
I'm backtracking here so fast. I don't know if you can see the wheels in my brain going reverse real fast. All right. So, you know, this is why we don't voice thoughts out loud all the time, people.
But what were you going to say? I want to know, though. Were you going to be like, but I could get on board or something like that?
Probably. Look, they describe him as like being hot.
Yeah,
okay. He's hot. Like, this is Rune and Bryce's dad. He's hot.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't honestly help that.
He's probably like Eris, where he's troubled. He's been led astray. Mm-hmm. In his heart, is he good? I don't know. But maybe. At least I'm more confident in Eris.
I'm way more confident with Eris. I'm willing to get like, hey, he never burned his son's arm, or like he did it while saving him. I don't know. Like, I'm willing to go there. Like, fine. Give me.
Never mind that Rune has PTSD. It's fine.
Well, like, if he was trying to save him, I'm totally making this up. There's no evidence to support this. You know what? New year, new Jack. We're not going to lust after the problematic characters.
Yeah, this was all in the past, folks. 2024, yeah. Jack is turning over a new leaf.
I actually... Technically, today is 2023 when we're recording it.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, you're right. 2024 me, I was going to say, I had this great idea last night of coming up with a bingo card for season 5 for listeners.
Oh, I love it.
And I want to see if anyone wants to contribute, like...
Yes.
Amy calls them dumb, or calls dumb.
Yeah.
Jack thirsts after a problematic character.
We should just post something on Patreon for people to contribute to.
Oh yeah, fill it out. Yeah, I agree. It's I would love people to get their bingo.
Yeah, love it.
Yeah. Great email, Jeannie. The next email comes from Michu. Meet you. I know. It's M-I-C-H-U. Meet you. And I was like.
Like meet you.
Meet
you. Or meet cute.
Or meet cute. Meet it just, that's all they've given me.
I love it. Support. It's a great name.
I was rereading House of Earth and Blood, and I am now convinced I know the exact moment Hunt and Bryce's mating bond snaps in. Here's my theory. It snaps when they go to the gun range, chapter 36, It's described when Hunt grabs the gun to shoot after Bryce did. Quote, that click reverberated between them, loud as a thunderclap. After this scene is when we start really seeing the attraction between them. And then later in chapter 52, Bryce cooks what she calls an apology meal for him. Call me crazy, but this feels like a mate soup situation. Quote, Hunt studied the steaming pot of meat and rice. He's seen dogs served fancier meals, but he smiled slightly, his chest inexplicably tightening again.
I love it.
I'm happy we got this email before we got to those chapters so we can reference it.
Well, I think this is such a great point, Michu, because SJM, you know, I saw this mostly in Sky and Breath. When we get Cormac's version of winnowing. And I'm like, it's like mm-hmm. winnowing without winnowing. SJM, you're being lazy. Like, why didn't you try to come up with something else?
Yeah.
All before knowing what I know by the end of Sky and Breath. Mm-hmm. And I think SJM is doing a fantastic job weaving in a bunch of lore subtly that we're not always making connections with. Like, oh, we've seen this before. And it is, and it's not because she's lazy.
Yeah,
it's because it has significance.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree.
I love it. I mean, like, I think this one leans into that phrase clicks into place, which is a phrase mm-hmm. that Reese uses quite a bit. And we get mm-hmm. that a lot in ACOTAR, that, you know, things just clicked into place.
Yeah.
And you never like get that.
Yeah. Click.
It's really hard for me not to start singing Blank Space. And I've got your name. Yeah. But it, like, you don't get an actual click, you know, like you kind of feel, you get descriptions of light. I think mm-hmm. this is one of the first ones that you get that almost as if it's so intense that it snaps into place and you can hear that snap.
Yeah, like the mating bond is so visceral mm-hmm. and physically manifests into an actual click.
Yeah.
Which we haven't really seen, which is really cool.
It's like when your stomach gurgles so loud that everyone else hears it too.
Oh, I was thinking it's your stomach gurgles so loud that you slap it and tell it to shut up.
Talk about a personal experience there.
Yeah. You're embarrassing me. Stop it.
Stop it. We're not doing this today. You're in the middle of a work meeting. Hold on, guys. Get back in.
You just got to have a firm hand sometimes.
All right. This next one is a long one. So Stay in it with me, and I'm going to break it up, you know, at any given points.
Do you need to take a little sip of water before you get started?
You know, maybe I will. Hold on. All right. This comes from Anna. Hello, Amy and Jack. Just a forewarning. This might be a long message. I wanted to say how grateful I am for your insightful podcast. I've been a fan of SJM for years now, and I've been longing to discuss her worlds with people who are also obsessed with her as I am. You also have inspired me to get back into writing. I just felt like, you know, we don't read when people compliment us.
It's true. I typically cut out the compliments because people don't want to. It's false modesty is what it is. Let's just be honest. It's false modesty on my part.
Yeah. Do you see my never mind. I was going to say the anti-hero lyrics. My covert disguises altruism.
Yeah, that's exactly me.
You two have provided a lot of amazing background information that I've never realized was intentional on SJM's part, making me appreciate her even more as an amazing writer. One thing I'm particularly invested in is SJM's use of music and art scattered throughout her series. I'm entering my senior year of college studying music education with an instrumental and piano emphasis. Taken over 2 years of in-depth music theory, as well as a year of music history, 2 years of conducting, and a semester of advanced score study. So basically, Anna knows what she's talking about.
Yeah, for sure.
It's also given me a different perspective when it comes to analyzing the literature I know and love. We see a lot of her main characters often have some kind of connection to art or music. Examples include Feyre as a painter, Nesta and Bryce as dancers, Aelin plays piano, and also has a deep love for the opera/orchestra. And there's many more. I've learned from this podcast that Sarah is intentional with almost everything she does, making it seem significant to me that the female lead of each of her series has an affinity to music or art. I've done a deep dive into some of Sarah's writing processes, and I know she's mentioned that she gets a lot of her inspiration from music. This is common for a lot of writers. Jack talks about it too. Yeah, I do. Because Sarah is so well-read and versed in many religious myths and European lore, those end up leading into her writing. I wouldn't be surprised if she also gets some of her story ideas from the music she listens to. Some examples that come to mind include Swan Lake Ballet and The Firebird. There's Stravinsky's. Oh, I think I did it.
Yeah, Stravinsky.
Wow. And Stravinsky's Firebird Suite, which I have conducted and analyzed. The story of Swan Lake ties into Vass's plot, as well as the evil twin theory surrounding Gwyn and her sisters. Sarah has also confirmed that she found specific inspiration from the final song of the ballet for a scene from the Throne of Glass series. At the very end of Queen and Shadow, when Aelin and Rowan set foot in Terrasen for the first time in years, Sarah hears the final song from Swan Lake. Stravinsky's Firebird Suite ties almost directly to Vass's storyline. The ballet is based on the Russian folktale of the Firebird, which Igor Stravinsky used as inspiration for his song. The Firebird Ballad tells the story of Prince Ivan, who defeats the evil Kaschei with a C-A, Kaschei.
Okay.
It's not with a C-O. With the help of the Firebird, who offers one of the enchantment feathers to Prince Ivan after he spares her life while hunting in the forest. The feather is later used by Prince Ivan to summon the Firebird when he needs her help as Kaschei's creatures chase after him. The Firebird's magic makes Kaschei, his creature, fall into a deep sleep so that Prince Ivan can destroy the egg that contains... I'm going to switch to Kaschei in case someone's hurting me say Kaschei's immortal soul, freeing everyone under his spell, including 13 princesses. Oh, 13. I didn't realize 13 was a big... You know who else is 13?
Taylor Swift.
Oh, I was thinking Manon, but you know what? Yes, 13 Taylor Swift.
Manon, yes. Well, we've actually talked about Stravinsky's Firebird, yep. And we've talked about Swan Lake in the form of Nesta dancing in silver flames.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So both of these are familiar to us.
Yeah. It's always good to remind everyone, though.
Yeah, for sure. Because we haven't talked about it in a long time.
Yeah, like, it's been a long time. And I also love hearing it from, like, you know...
A music perspective.
Yeah, music perspective rather than, like, story perspective. Anyway, mm-hmm. I'm going to continue. Rings any bells, Vasa? How about putting magic creatures to sleep in order to destroy their eternal soul? It reminds me of how, in Throne of Glass, Gavin and Elena put the Valg King to sleep, sealed in the tomb for thousands of years. Furthermore, Stravinsky wasn't the first to set music to his Russian tale. The original music was by... Why we do this? Anatoly Levdov. That's not right. Liadov. All right, we're moving forward. Known for his orchestral piece, Enchanted Lake. This title reminds me of the lake Aelin and Rowan discover in Air of Fire, as well as the lake where Kaschei is. The number 13 can also point to Manon and her 13 witches. Okay, I clearly didn't read further enough. And the one witch who fell in love with Asterin. While I have nothing to back these wild connections, they're just what I see in the story and characters. Coincidences like this shouldn't be ignored, at least not when it comes to SJM.
So I think the second composer is Anatoly Liadov.
Yep.
Anatoly Liadov.
It's exactly what I said. No, it's not. I think we've talked about the Vasa connection, but we've never talked about the Throne of Glass connection with it.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, I think that's because I hadn't read Throne of Glass by that point. And, well, no, you know, yours was a fever dream.
Yeah, mine was a fever dream. But also no one else brought this up. So I love how I'm blaming the listeners. I was like, you're the ones who didn't tell us.
I think that this is part of SJM's attempt to... Because what... I think this comes to a fundamental question. Are the worlds parallel universes? Are they past, present, future? Are they planets within the same solar system? Like, there's a lot we don't know about how these places are connected.
Mm-hmm.
However, we do know that some of the Fae came from these other worlds into Midgard. So there's at least some history and some tie. And I think, to me, it's not surprising that we're seeing the same motifs, these same themes of an enchanted lake and, you know, the Firebird story in different forms in each of these universes. And I think it's intentional, obviously.
Yeah.
Otherwise Sarah wouldn't do it, or Sarah's just not cognizant of it, which I don't believe at all. To me, in some way, this goes back to the reincarnation theory I've always had of these stories keep playing out because they're not fully resolved.
Yeah.
And that's why we're seeing the same themes over and over again, because the lesson hasn't been learned or the ultimate bad has not been defeated, etc. So that's my belief here. But what are your thoughts, Jack?
Yes. And I think for me, my main takeaway from this is, like, wow, SJM pulled from the same story. Mm-hmm. And we haven't seen her do that before. Mm-hmm. It's not like she, you know, when there's a story about like Persephone and Hades, like that's such a loose one, but you know, she doesn't pull that again. Or the story of Tamlin, you know, the Scottish right. lore. She doesn't pull from that again. I can't think of any other one where she gets different inspirations from the same story, right? Because mm-hmm. we have Vasa and Kosche, and mm-hmm. then we have the 13 princesses, obviously very similarly linked to the 13 with Manon. So I'm wondering if that's like her way of saying that there's a direct link between the two of these.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like Manon and Vasa, there's going to be a connection there, mm-hmm. a parallel there, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. like now we're just getting into like, you know, all sorts of like teaser spoilers, theories where I'm just like, you know, Vasa being human, we and I have been like, so what happens to her? Like, does she get with Jurian? Does Jurian now have a human life? Is he immortal? You know, like, I feel like no one ends up mortal in SJM world. Like, everyone ends up immortal, like, you know, being able to be with their partner forever.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, does she get with Jurian? Does she get with Lucien? Like, whoever she gets with, or she gets with no one, or with a woman, who knows? But, like, it feels like SJM wouldn't have a main character. I mean, she's not a main character, but wouldn't have a key player die off unless that is the fate. But it just was like, I don't know.
It would answer
some things. Yes.
So between what Anna was saying and what you were saying, I can see. And then what I was saying, let's put it all together. We know that Elaine and Aelin, their names have the same letters, just rearranged. Right?
We did?
Yes. This is all over TikTok. Aelin and Elaine have the same letters. They're
now
just
that
rearranged.
You're on TikTok, I have been left behind.
And the 13 that Kosh, 13 women Kosche have trapped mm-hmm. is related to Vasa. So in a way, it's related to Manon and her 13.
Yeah.
In my mind, who between Manon and Elaine, who's the human guy? That Elaine and Aelin both leave behind is what's his name that everybody Grayson? Hates? Grayson, but what's his name in Throne of Glass? Oh, Kale.
Oh, Cole. Kale.
Kale is Grayson, Dorian is Jurian.
Whoa.
And we're seeing this because we never got the end of Manon and Dorian's story.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like we're going to see some of that play out. And it's, mm-hmm. this is, again, this reincarnation. We never got to see the end of that in Throne of Glass. What if we get to see it play out in ACOTAR?
Oh, I love
and
this.
I just think, like, if it is a parallel universe, right, because they did not get their ending in Throne of Glass world, they're going to get their ending in ACOTAR world as these other characters. That. So I'm just really excited. I gave myself goosebumps.
You gave yourself goosebumps.
I did.
You're like, oh my God. I'm so good. Do you see just the chills I have in my own talent?
No, it's not that. It's SJM's talent.
Yeah,
no, stories being told.
It's. I think what hurts the most is how close we are to finding out the truth.
I know. Like, except there's apparently going to be more Crescent City books.
Yeah, but like not part of this Crescent City, if that makes sense. It's the same way that Nesta's part of like
it's gonna be somebody else's story.
Yeah, that's my theory. She hasn't confirmed anything, but she says that this is a 3-book arc.
I bet it's Therian, because I don't know,
make him useful, have a purpose, because right now
he pisses me off.
Got none for us. Wow, we're
haters.
The next one comes from Eleanor. Hi, Amy and Jack. Want to start by saying I love the podcast so much. Hearing the way both your brains think and analyze is amazing. Never heard anyone say that about how my brain works. So, thank you. Here's my theory. The Valg, Daglin, and Asteri are all the same. Maybe not the same individuals, but the same species. I also don't think that Rhys is Valg. Here are the similarities between the three. All drink the magic of the land slash people, all take on different forms, all travel from different worlds, and all have creatures they create as their army. Similar, similar. I think we are being told a bigger story. ACOTAR, where the story of the Daglin was told in the past, Throne of Glass, where the story of the Valg was told in the present, and Crescent City, where it's just beginning. Different worlds stacked, but also at different times. I think this theory was mentioned, but I'm not quite sure. On to why I don't think Rhys is Valg. Maeve is said to have violet eyes, like Rhys. However, this is not Maeve's true form. She takes the form of a fae body, but it's not said where she's got the image of the body from. I don't think her having violet eyes links Rhys or Rune to Valg, but more that there was possibly a version in Throne of Glass world that might have had violet eyes that Maeve was inspired by. I think that might have been Dorian's bloodline before Bryce sees Rhys. Amy's head is jiggling so much right now. I got a little bit more. I think that might have been Dorian's bloodline before Bryce sees Rhys and links the eyes. Rune is described to have blue eyes. One thing we know about Dorian is his sapphire or vibrant blue eyes. All three are oddly similar in description as well. It could be nothing, but Dorian is very powerful, and I think there is some connection there. Anyway, those are my late night theories. Love the podcast. I'm excited for what's to come. All right, go ahead. Let your head jiggle.
Love it. Wonderful job. I agree. So Maeve had to take on a form of a fae. Mm-hmm. And I know as humans, we're not very good at, like, studies show that when you, like, sleep or close your eyes and you imagine a face, it's a face you've seen before. You're not capable of imagining a face you haven't seen before. Mm-hmm. If that is true for Maeve, she had to have taken on a form of a face she's seen.
Yeah.
Potentially, right? Or so killed. Dorian's bloodline or killed. What if the form of Maeve in Throne of Glass is identical to Rhys's mother in ACOTAR?
Holy shit. You're just coming in hot and fast today. Wow.
It's an unhinged theory, but it could be part of Dorian's bloodline, mm-hmm. which could be part of Rhys's bloodline. Like, we don't know.
Fair.
So yeah, that's what I got.
You got a lot.
Thanks.
I wanted to know. You got a lot. Contributed a lot.
Thanks.
You did great. I love the idea. Like, very early on, everyone latched onto this. Rhys is Valg. Rhys is evil. Look at him in silver flames. He's evil. And I'm saying that as if I wasn't one of them. But I never really did think that he was evil. I couldn't be on board with him being Valg. But the evidence of him, of people being like, well, look at how he was in silver flames. I feel like you and I are very aligned of like, babe, that's just who he is. Like, that's sorry.
Yeah.
Never changed.
And Nesta's POV is going to be different from Feyre's POV. So they're going to describe his behavior differently.
So I'm on board with stepping away from the whole, he is Valg.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know how Dorian looks. Similar to them. I think we do, other than the eyes, right? Like, we never put together that Rhys and Rune had similar descriptions until after, but we now know that they're near identical.
Right.
What we do know about Rune is that he is tan.
Yeah.
Right. And that's something that we do know about Dorian, is that he's a little white boy, right? Like, he's pretty fair.
I think that's right.
Right. That's kind of how, I mean, at least going off of the art I've seen,
I think that's right.
He's very fair.
But so was Rhys while he was under the mountain.
Yeah, but like once he got some sun, he was fine.
Right. We don't know how much sun Dorian got.
I think he gets some sun.
I don't know. Royals, you know, they have to be
like a crystal little palace. Like the UV.
It might have UV protection. You don't know.
The skin cancer that's rampant in that kingdom. I am curious to see how similar that they're all going to go in. There's like the power of three, right? Like, you're not going to have just two characters that look alike. I mean, you might, but Sarah loves going for that three hitter, right? And we talk about this. This is really popular in writing and in movies where if they don't get it on the first try or the second try, then on the third try, it works.
Powerful.
Even the introduction, I was watching Love Actually, and he's trying to see, like, the guy is trying to sing that song.
I feel it in my fingers.
I feel it in my toes. He doesn't get it until the third one. And as I was watching it, I was like, the power of three, mother. I was watching with my mom. And it was like, you know, so Sarah, though, is really great about leaning into that.
Yeah.
So I can't, I would very much get on board with the fact that there's going to be another third identical looking guy in there.
Yeah, I agree. And
maybe Dorian just needs to stop applying the sunscreen and we will discover how tan he is. Get. Yeah. I mean, it's similar to me. But like, I know. I heard it as I was saying, and I'm like, I regret this entirely. But like, I'm very fair. Mm-hmm. But then because I am Latin, you put me in the sun and I can get very dark crispy. Very quickly. Get crispy, a little spicy. But like, you know, people would never guess that because of like how white I am.
Right.
Patreon here, like you guys can see, just look at that glimmer. Look at that.
Yeah.
Shine, radiant.
You look whiter than me right now.
It's true. I'm really glowy too. Look at that. Mm-hmm. If you want to see the video to this episode, you can go join our Patreon. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, I'm going to make this available for everyone. Here's a little one from Maddie W. So I'm on chapter 86 of Crescent City, and I had a thought as I was driving to work after. What if when Micah opened the portals with the horn, that was also when in Silver Flames, Nesta started to mess with the Dread Trove, specifically the harp? That would explain why Nesta had the dread about other worlds and why all the gates in Crescent City opened, because it wasn't just Micah and the horn, the harp was assisting.
I mean, I haven't read Silver Flames in so long, so I would never have made that connection. But
there's a lot of connection with Silver Flames. And
yeah.
Like,
I could see it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm because she was probably writing both of these at the same time, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Both Crescent City, House of Earth and Blood, as well as ACOTAR Silver Flames. Yeah. Yeah, I'm disappointed. Yeah. We were tempted to read Silver Flames and we didn't. And now I'm disappointed
in us. We're here to analyze Crescent City.
We're here to analyze Crescent City. But I would not be surprised when we do eventually go back and read Silver Flames for us to be like, aha, yes, I do see the Crescent City connection here, and that the Dread Trove was working in combination with the Horn and Micah, because what if the Horn is part of the Dread Trove?
Yeah.
And absolutely. It just ended up in the wrong part, you know, the wrong world, and from its kin.
Part of the reason why we're also not doing Silver Flames right now is because we wanted to see how Crescent City 3 played out. Yeah. And, you know, like, we know that there's a lot of connections. What if Hunt really is somehow connected to Nesta and Cassian? What if there are these other things?
Yeah.
And we're able to see what foreshadowing there is. And we want to be able to, like, dive into that more. Yep. So the reason why we're like, we'll do it later is because we just needed to see how that played out.
I'm not saying we made the wrong choice.
Oh no, I know there's someone out there who is, and I'm telling them.
Got it. I would not be surprised if the horn in Bryce's back is related to the Dread Trove that Nesta and Cassian have been searching for.
Just imagine if you knew there was like a thing in your skin like that.
Because it has a mind of its own, essentially.
Yeah. Does it know what you're thinking? Because now I'm thinking like alien, like it's attached to you.
You're the host. It's a parasite.
Ew.
Why not?
Do you think it's like watching? What I mean?
Yeah. What if the harp was ground up and tattooed into Nesta? Like she would have a hard time controlling it.
I was like, you know when you kind of like rings unite thing? And I was like, do you have to tattoo it on her back? And then they like back bump with each other. And they're like, ooh. They're like, we must merge these two together. Quick, back to back.
I don't think that's how it works, but great.
No, I don't think
so. But the visual is great.
But, you know, it's never too late for SJ. No, it is too late for SJ to add that. Yeah. These have been absolutely great theories. We haven't done a listener email in so long, and, you know, we're revving up for season 5, and we just have a couple more minis to come out, and then we're going to be in the thick of it.
Yeah, but keep the emails coming, because it will be great to get your viewpoints, because there's no way with how big that book is that we're going to be able to cover everything.
No, not a chance.
So it would be great to hear from folks in more of this theory and thoughts on the writing. And
also literary analysis style, because a lot of the messages we get, and not just what we get, but like the discussion out there, is more about the theories surrounding Crescent City,
right?
Not the literary breakdown. And that's something that you and I have been really cognizant of as we've been doing season 5 and doing our notes and everything. And it's been pretty fun to look at it in such a different perspective than what people have been talking about. And then seeing how much thought SJM put behind it in literary ways rather than theoretical plot ways.
Yeah. I saw something on TikTok that was someone, and you know, it's one of those where it's just like a 7-second video of someone's face, but it has a bunch of text on the screen.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And it was something to the effect of, can we all just agree that none of us understood the first 100 pages of Crescent City 1 and that anyone who says otherwise is lying?
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's true, but when you read it the second time, it's because we're like, Danica.
I know.
I'm so excited for this season, guys.
You guys, like, even in the first episode, you and I got into so many things that we were just like, how did we miss all of this?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been a very fun, we're recording episode 5 tomorrow.
Yep.
And that means we're going to be
one third of the way through.
I was waiting for you to do the math. Thank you. I appreciate
it. You're welcome.
I was thinking about when we were reading that one email talking about like how SJM's characters are all very art related. You know, they're into painting, dancing, music. Give me the main character girly who really rocks Excel.
Me.
That's you.
That's me.
You're like, I can add a formula like nobody's business.
That's right. Or give me the main female character who likes to crochet.
Yeah, right. It's an art form. Or just like the person who likes to scroll on TikTok for a long time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's a, It's funny because it's like none of us, we really like, I like art. I don't do it.
Yeah.
I don't paint it. I like music. Don't make it.
I bet. I know nothing about SJM's personal hobbies or abilities other than writing. Maybe
know something.
She might just be a deep appreciator. It doesn't mean she plays the piano.
Looking around in my room as if looking to see what I appreciate. Like, I'm a deep appreciator, but there's an
fake
entire
flowers.
Like, you see that? Those fake flowers over there? And I put on the lights as if that was going to make a big dramatic difference in my background. So, yeah, if you want to see the video of this episode, go join our Patreon. It's available at every level.
Woohoo!
Woo! Happy New Year!
Happy New Year.
See
you all. I guess never. I guess we never see anybody, but
no, never say never.
Never say never.
Maybe in person one day.
I think what I was trying to say, and it didn't come out, was like, see you all in season 5 real soon. Like, we're so excited to share this season.
No, you did it. You said exactly what you should have said.
I know. Second time's a charm. And the days I need to take off for when Crescent City 3 comes out.
I'm not ready. I got like a wave of butterflies and nausea at the same time. Yeah. I'm stuck between reading or listening. Like, what's going to be faster?
I'm going to delete my social media apps off my phone.
Yeah.
When it comes out, until I'm done reading it.
I believe in our listeners on not sending spoilers.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I will do what I did with Throne of Glass, where I'll post updates on Threads. Will I?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because that'll be entertaining, but you not do threads, spoiler
I'll
free.
I'll do Instagram stories.
Great.
Divide and conquer.
Yes.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this mini episode of Book Talk for Book Talk. We encourage you to rate and subscribe to our show on your preferred podcast listening platform.
We would love to hear your thoughts based on today's conversation. You can submit your comments to our form at booktalkforbooktalk.com or via our Camflare voicemail system. Please visit booktalkforbooktalk.com for more information.
You can also follow us on TikTok or Instagram at the handle booktalkforbooktalk. Bye!